Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And for our regular listeners, which I hope you will all become if you've just happened upon this for the first time today, this is a presentation of stories, people with stories to tell, and love letters lurking that they are going to write or have written. And I want to say I believe, but I really know that every experience in life has the seeds in it of a love letter to someone. Maybe just gratitude. I shouldn't say just gratitude. Gratitude is huge. Maybe gratitude. Maybe romantic love. Maybe the end of romantic love. Maybe a memory. Something you want to send to somebody else in your handwriting in an envelope stamped and mailed to arrive at somebody else's front door and cheer up a life. Today's guest is Ed Kaza, who is a writer, and I think this is your first novel?
Yes, it is.
Okay, he's in San Francisco to speak here, and his novel is called Nowhere Yet. And I'm going to go right to you and just ask you, since you're new to San Francisco and not somebody we all know well, to talk about yourself.
Well,
you had mentioned that your Italian ancestors were from Colorado.
Yes, my Italian ancestors were from Colorado, and they wanted to become Americanized, and they didn't speak Italian. They wanted to be American.
So it was no longer La Cozza.
No, it was Kaza, and There was no Cozza, and nobody spoke Italian. So
did you know any of your Italian ancestors, or was this all?
Yes, they were first generation folks came over, of course, on the boat, and
were those your grandparents?
Great grandparents.
Oh, so you really are Americanized.
But every American holiday, they had the American food spread,
uh-huh.
But there was always a gigantic bowl of spaghetti and meatballs.
Oh,
so
nice.
It didn't matter whether it was Easter or Christmas or whatever.
Yeah.
They always did that. So that was always a lot of fun.
So what was like growing up for you? Anything?
Oh, it was great. We lived in a very rural, real small town in western Colorado, and it was very rural, and it was tons of fun.
Are you an only child?
No, I have... I have a brother and a sister.
Mm-hmm.
But you were got up and you went out in the morning and you came home for lunch and you went out and you just were outside all day.
This is, you're talking about summers.
Summers and winters.
Oh, so after school you would
summers
still be out.
Winters, yeah. You'd be out sledding or skating or,
oh.
You know, you'd be doing something. So you were very seldom in the house. And since TV wasn't that much fun. So we were always outside.
That's nice.
So maybe my imagination, because we were always doing something, maybe that's where some of my imagination.
Well, that's a good point. I think imagination is something you have, that you're lucky if you're born with a good one.
Yes.
I mean, I think there's some genetic luck there, and then what you do with it.
You don't think about it when you're a kid. You're just out having fun and you're doing whatever you're doing. You
right.
Don't think about, well, gee, I have a vivid imagination, and then when you sit down and start writing a book.
Okay, so let's talk about the transition from being out there and playing to writing a book. There were some years in between, right?
There were some years in between, yes. And
how were those spent?
So corporate America, lots of travel, lots of time by myself. And
Can I ask what you did in corporate America?
I'm sorry?
What did you do in corporate America?
I was kind of a customer troubleshooter, so I traveled around, and when things got hot, they would bring me into.
Mm-hmm.
I was a relationship guy with the customer. And so I would travel all over and meet with the customers and take care of them. Make things right. And it was, you know, it was great.
I have a question about that, a little off the track, but I have noticed that today, I don't know if there are such people as what you did. Because personally, I mean, you're talking about something that's kind of interesting. Anybody can make a mistake. That's not the offense. The offense is that when a company or a person doesn't make it right. So you were the person who was sent out to make it right.
Well, yes, and we used to say, the people I had working for me used to say, listen, everybody gets their, we called it time in the barrel. Everybody is on top. That's their time. Everybody's at the bottom on their time being company. So
mm-hmm.
you're the preferred person one time, but you're not the other. So anyway, everybody makes mistakes.
That's right.
But it's how you handle that.
That's right.
That makes it right.
So when you went out to make things better, was there a, gee, I'm so sorry this happened in your vocabulary or what? I'm interested because I think one of the great love letters is the apology love letter.
Well, we tried to deal with it very pragmatically because
mm-hmm.
we were me and the fellows that worked for me, we were very pragmatic about it because that was our job.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of the group was, you know, the sales or some mm-hmm. other people would just be apologetic and, oh, I don't know how this happened. It's business. Something's going to happen. The dry cleaner's mm-hmm. going to run over your blouse with a truck.
Right.
And you're going to hold it up and say, what are you going to do? And the, mm-hmm. and the dry cleaner that says, gee, I don't know how that happened and doesn't do anything, you're not going to go back there.
Right.
Versus the one that says, I'm so, gee, that's unfortunate, but that happens here. Let's take care of it.
Yes.
So we didn't spend any time apologizing. We said,
but that's unfortunate.
That's unfortunate. Here's what we're going to do. Take
so
care.
That's an acknowledgement.
Here's what we're
going to
do.
Yes.
Here's what we're going to do to
yeah.
take care of it.
Okay.
And we approach it pragmatically and mm-hmm. not hide or stay away from the telephone or something like
yeah.
that. So we say, and as a result, you develop good relationships because
sure.
you would tell the people, listen, there's a difference between being liked and being respected.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that's respected, that's you're gonna build a relationship. And inevitably probably build a friendship,
mm-hmm.
build a friendship
yeah.
from what you're doing because you're coming straight on and you're mm-hmm. saying, I'm going to take care of this. So that's what we would do. And sometimes that was very draining. And then you're,
Because you're faced with angry people.
Sometimes, mm-hmm. not always, but you're trying to deal with, uh-huh. with that sort of thing. And then you, you know, decompress, you go back to the room or you fly back home or mm-hmm. something. And there you sit and you're decompressed and you're looking around at the people and they look sad and you in the hotels and in the airports and you say, do I look like that?
Oh,
I don't ever want to look like that.
Do you feel you did?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No.
I wish this were a television moment once again because you're so, you've got such an innately cheerful face.
Well, you have to. I mean, you know, if you're
Well, you're
not,
lucky if you have that temperament.
Well, it's,
yeah.
you got to be. I mean,
but when
just,
you left these assignments, you must have felt pretty good that you had solved a problem. That's a nice feeling to make things right.
Oh, yes. I didn't,
yeah.
and I didn't do it by myself. I had a lot of people working for me and other people integral with the company and mm-hmm. such. So, but it's like a baseball team, you know, somebody throws the ball and somebody catches the ball and hits the
yeah.
ball. And so it's a team, but you feel good about what you do and you're confident about what you do. And any problem or challenge, you just take it on.
So your life has had kind of a positive slant to it all along.
Well, you have to. I say you have to, but it's survival mode, you know. And like I say, when you see people that you don't know in the airports and hotel lobbies, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and they look so sad, and you say, man, I don't want to look like that. After
yes.
doing this for many years, I don't want to look like that. I got to mm-hmm. be upbeat. And so then you start saying, I wonder what they're thinking.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see where you're going here. Yeah.
So I wonder what that conversation is with that man mm-hmm. and that woman. I wonder what's going on there. So you start thinking in your mind, well, maybe they're talking about this. Maybe they're mm-hmm. talking about that. And you're bridging back to the childhood days of the wild, vivid imagination when you're out playing. So, and surprisingly enough, things like that sort of came to light.
Mm-hmm.
And I started jotting some of the thoughts down on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what kind of got me. That's what kind of got me started doing this.
Now you've written some short stories before, is that right?
I actually started this as a short story. I said, "Well, I want to write a book,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know how to do that."
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll write a short story or two and then see. And so I started writing the short story, but there was so much just started coming that I never did do the short story.
Oh, that's a hard thing to.
And I went to, and I just went ahead and went to the. Went to write the novel, so.
Now, okay, before we get to that, I'm just interested because before we started here on this, you mentioned that you hadn't been married very long, only 30 years.
Just, yes. That's right. That's
and,
right. We got married when we were 10, so.
Yes.
So.
Well, how did you meet?
We met.
I like a good love story, so.
We met in college.
Uh-huh.
We met in college, and a friend of my wife, she was paying off a bet. She had to go out with this fellow because she had lost a bet to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow was my neighbor. Where we lived,
mm-hmm.
and he took me with him, and that's how we met. And she said she was really impressed until I stood up. So
why?
So apparently she thought I was short. So
oh yeah, she wanted you to be taller.
That's wow.
Apparently she didn't care that much.
Yeah, I want to be taller. I think my growth spurt's about done. So
yes, probably so.
So that's how we that's how we met and was in college. So it's been a lot of fun, and we try and laugh all the time.
Good.
We try and laugh all the time. I saw Garrison Keillor last week, was down in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
and he said, if you're going to pick a life mate, pick somebody who's has a great sense of humor because mm-hmm. he says later on when things aren't quite as romantic, he says a sense of humor really comes in handy.
It always comes in handy. But, you know, I've noticed that almost all people think they're funny. Have you ever met anybody who says, I have no sense of humor?
I did one time, strangely enough, one time. But you're right, to your point, mm-hmm. most of the time everybody, they do.
Yes, people think they're funny. I don't get it. Most of them aren't.
And we don't know that we're funny out in public, but we know that together
we
laugh at the same
yes.
things. We don't know yeah. how funny we are in public and don't necessarily try to be in
public. Oh, and laughter's that's an interesting thing also because you don't have to be funny to permit laughter.
No.
Two separate things. The ability to laugh doesn't go from, it's not the result of a one-liner, yes.
You have to be open to the concept.
Yes. Alan Klein, who lives in San Francisco, bills himself as a jollytologist. And his life, his career, is teaching people how to laugh, people in dire crisis, burn victims and cancer survivors and people who have been through horrible things. And he says he's not funny. And somehow he's not. But being around him, you know you can. It's just, yes, it's a wonderful gift.
Well, it's a conscious decision, and I know people that unfortunately are, hey, I'm not perfect. I don't have my days too, but you get up in the morning and you say,
oh,
I can be happy that it's raining or sad that it's raining or happy that I feel this way and sad that I feel this way.
Oh, so you're talking about making choices. You can determine which way you're going to feel.
Not to quote the whole world, but Jimmy Buffett said in one of his songs, if we couldn't laugh, we would all go insane.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true.
And that's right. So. Yes. My wife and I, that's what we do.
I think that's why we were given that gift.
Exactly.
Is to keep
our motto is fun and funny, and so we try to do that. And if people want to do that when they're around, great. And if they don't, well, so that makes it a lot easier, I think, anyway.
So let's talk about your book. Where did you started, to write while you were working and while you were traveling? You said you were making notes.
Yes, you have a lot of time. You know, I'm not doing it during work hours. I'm
right.
doing my job, but when you're there in the hotel room and you don't want to watch TV at night and you're sitting on a plane and
you look at somebody, you look at a couple or a group of people and what is it you imagine? I mean, I do that too in restaurants. You look at couples and think, what is their relationship and who are they together? So what is it you write down? You make up the conversation based on something?
I just take mental notes and take some physical notes. And I always have a pen and a piece of paper with me. And I took a long time, way longer than I should, to decide how to do it.
How do you do it?
Well, I was trying to decide whether to do it on a computer or not.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Well, that's just the mechanics, the logistical the mechanics mm-hmm. of it. And so then I said, well, I always have a pen in my pocket, and I always have he holds up to the microphone. I always have a Moleskine journal in
yes.
my pocket or a larger one carrying with me. And so I don't have to turn it off in the airplane. I don't have to worry about having the cord plugged in.
Yes.
So I started writing and making notes, and I would see people and I would think about people I had known or people I had met or even people I just saw and imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just make notes and I just started going. And
what kinds of things did you write down?
It was really just stream of consciousness. I mm-hmm. kind of had an idea for a story and then just started writing. And as you saw funny things or mm-hmm. different things around in the travels, you just wrote that down.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I would write down.
So when you say that the title of your book here, I see, is Nowhere Yet.
Well, I like to think that there's some hope. That there's some hope. Nowhere, you think, he's nowhere, but say, well, he's nowhere yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's hope. I've got two more books. It's the first of a three-book trilogy on and it's just,
wait on what?
It's people. It's friendships. Mm-hmm. It's relationships.
Can you just open a page and read us a little bit? Are you comfortable doing that? Just open it to somewhere that interests you. Is it by chapters or?
Yes, I just opened.
Go ahead.
I just opened it up.
Okay, give us a feel.
You had better tell the bartender when she gets back, because she also seems to be quite interested in what you do, Cat added. What? Grant said. It wouldn't be the first time someone was interested in you. Annie stopped herself, wishing she hadn't said it. Grant leaned forward, staring at her, as if he were trying to bore a hole into her soul. he started feeling the need to defend himself. I know you didn't. I'm sorry I said anything. Annie paused. So business is good? Okay, constant. What about you? The same. Nothing to talk about.
Okay, so who are these people?
These are former lovers. Mm-hmm. They've not seen each other in years. Mm-hmm. And Grant and Annie and Grant's combustible friend Rex has been missing for a couple of years, and he calls Grant out of the blue and says, hey, let's go spend the weekend in Palm Springs. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to bring – I got your ex-girlfriend to come meet – agree to meet us there for a weekend in Palm Springs. So it's former friends, former lovers, and they get together for a weekend and wonder why things have gone the way they have. When people get so busy with the business of managing life.
Oh, yes.
And they forget to tell a friend how much they mean to them. They forget, or it just gets too busy. Or maybe they didn't forget, but they didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And so after many years of not seeing somebody that they're really, really close with, they say, wow, that time, I hope that all these good times haven't passed us by and that there's still good times left to come.
There are going to be people who hear this that think that I asked you beforehand to say this.
You didn't.
So that I could segue in, which I didn't plan to do. But you're talking about something that is exactly what love letters is about.
Okay.
You let that time go by and you don't say anything.
Right.
Now you, who carry a pen and this beautiful journal with you at all times, and I'm guessing that there is something about the power of your own handwriting as you see it lay out on the paper.
There is, and they actually have, I didn't know this when I started, but they've actually done studies.
You bet they have.
That say, you know, there really is a correlation to creativity, and school kids aren't writing anymore, they're typing, and it's... Mm-hmm. I didn't do a scientific survey before I started the book, but...
But your instinct is to do it
like
this. And by the way, your handwriting is so much your thumbprint... Your fingerprint.
Yes.
Nobody's got yours.
Right.
Everybody's got Lucida Bright.
Right.
So that's just interesting to me. But for those times that you are worried that some time has gone by and you've let a friendship slide.
Yes.
There is a 46-cent stamp and a piece of paper somewhere.
Right.
And it takes 3 minutes.
Yes.
I mean, it can take longer than that to do a, you know, lots of letters. And there's no length requirement for a good love letter.
Yes.
But to pick up a piece of paper and say... Something like, the days are going too fast, but I think of you a lot, and I wanted to say hello. I don't want any more time to go by.
Right.
I don't want you to think I don't remember you.
Yes.
And stick it in an envelope.
Absolutely.
And put it in the mail. When that arrives at, you know, Jimmy's house,
yes,
it's going to be like a bag of diamonds is on his mail pile.
No, absolutely, because people don't do that anymore.
Right. But that's such an interesting thing, because we do let time go by.
Yes. And throughout the process... I would sometimes write letters to people.
Okay. Tell me about that.
And it was just something to, I've been fortunate, that I haven't had writer's block because there just seems to be a lot coming out. But sometimes if I'm struggling with an idea or something, but I would still write letters to people, not a lot, but, and it just seemed to help. It was kind of, you know.
Oh, it helps you.
It helped me.
Nice.
And it helped me with my writing, but it also helped.
Whoever
I was writing, because what does that hurt? When did you ever get a letter of somebody just saying, hey, what are you doing?
Right.
That didn't offend you. There's no way that could offend you.
Right.
And
that's
it was just something that I did to kind
it's
of help with my
it's
writing and pull it out. Hemingway used to say he used to write throwaway poetry when he was stuck, just poetry that he would kind of get his mind working a different way, and then he would throw it away. He wouldn't let anyone see it.
That's a good point, too, because that blank piece of paper is the enemy.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. So, so the writing, the actual physical act of writing helped a great deal. And the writing the letter, even a short one now and again, helped.
Mm-hmm.
And then the byproduct of that is it also helped with your feelings, with your emotional part of you. And the person that gets that letter says, well, this knucklehead was nice enough to sit down and write me a letter. I guess I'll take the time.
You
to
know, I sent a letter recently. I dropped a note to a friend whose husband had been sick. And she was in the hospital. Like, you know, I couldn't reach her. And I didn't want to reach her by phone because I was going to get a machine. And I was going to leave a message in a machine that someone else was going to pick up. And never mind my concerned and loving content in my message. It was going to get translated with Janet called. Ugh, down the drain. Why waste the time?
Yes.
And so I picked up a piece of paper, a little card, and I wrote a note. And the truth is, it took less time to write that note than it did to dial and leave a message.
Right.
And she called me, and she was so blown away that I had taken the time to write her a letter.
Yes.
I barely have the heart to say it took less time than calling you, dear, given what modern communication is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it just made them both so happy.
I've had people thank me for thank you notes. I don't I'm
yes.
not looking for that,
yes,
but I've had
course.
People thank you for the nice note.
Uh-huh.
No, wait, you did something nice uh-huh. for me, and I was sending you a thank you note.
Yes.
And I've had people
but you make another good point. You don't send a love letter or anything like that for what you get in return.
No.
It's just a gift.
No, this is what...
But you get.
No, absolutely.
Yes.
I had a friend years ago who used to write one of those Christmas letters, and then they said, well, nobody's writing back, and I'm going to quit writing. And I said... Well, what did you do it for?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't
Good
do it for the
you.
Response. You did it for that. That's it's the
yes,
spirit. So,
yes.
So the joy is in the journey is what I
That's
always
right.
what I always say.
And,
so.
And in the journal, as you
and in the journal.
Right.
So I write longhand. I print, but I write it all out in the book. And then the tough part is transposing it into the computer. And then the even tougher
sure.
part is when the editing comes. And
sure.
And then that kind of it's more fun writing it when you're sitting. Watching people and at a cafe, writing outside, or in a beautiful day, or something—that's a fun part. And then the editing is not as fun. So I figure that's like life, where you've got parts where you're out enjoying
yes,
and having
yes.
fun, and then the parts where
you've
got to
clean up after yourself.
Now I have to go on a diet, and
right.
now I have to, you know.
But I have something else to say here. This is you've got beautiful writing, printing, writing.
Thank you.
It's strong and it's clear.
Thank you.
And this is nice paper, and
yes.
it looks like good illegible ink.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So my point is. Handwriting. Somebody's going to find this in 100 years. And I don't know if you have children. I don't know if you've got nieces or nephews. Or
nieces, nephews, yes.
Somebody in your family is going to find this.
Probably.
And somebody finally, who's so distant from you but still in your family, is going to know something about great-great-Uncle Ed.
Yes.
In his own hand. It's gold.
Well, that's kind of nice. I hadn't thought of it that way, but okay.
Those
okay.
things don't disappear unless
I haven't thrown them away.
They'll show up.
I haven't thrown them away. I go through them once in a while and go, hey, did I really? I wrote that, huh? So it is good. It is,
yeah,
it is good.
It'll be in some passion. Future newspaper that
well, I hope so.
Edward Kotz's journals were found in his own handwriting. It'll be front page. But I have another question. Well, it's hard for you to take the time maybe to write love letters. Although, you know, even if you write one a week, people, it doesn't take a lot of time and you're adding something wonderful to the world. But you've got a book. When you give, and I'm saying this to authors now, when you give a book to somebody, anybody who does this, author or not, even though your book may be in some way a love letter to life or to the people you've been watching, it doesn't matter. Some really are. It's not in your handwriting. If you use that front page and take that as your stationery, you can write something just delicious.
Yes.
When you give that to a friend or a family member or whoever
yes.
it is, you know,
yes.
dear so-and-so, and you write a paragraph.
Yes.
Stationery.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I've done that with people that have helped me along the way, with friends
oh, nice.
That I've met, and it's... You know, you always wonder, well, when you get a book out, you're going to sign, and it's not the signing your name part. That's,
right.
That's, you do that all the time.
Right.
It's the note that you put in there to the people.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel good. I mean, it's
yeah.
like, this is somebody that I really care
the communication
about.
Communication.
Yes.
Directly from your heart to theirs.
This is somebody that's
yes.
been just instrumental, or they've been influential, you know, they've inspired me to do something. So
anything can be the stationery.
That's right.
In fact, when Steven Jobs died, people, I'm going to cry if I say this one more time, because people actually took actual apples and wrote
oh, wow.
goodbye letters to
oh,
him.
Wow.
Can
wow.
you, yeah, anything.
That's powerful.
Uh-huh, isn't
that's
that?
Powerful. I still write letters. I still write notes. I still buy.
Oh. Do you write
not,
notes? Do you
not,
write put,
not putting in a plug, but I still buy Crane stationery.
Yes, I do too.
I have personalized Crane yes. stationery, and the bookstore that helped me out in La Jolla,
mm-hmm.
Warwick's bookstore, I buy all my pens there. I buy all my ink, the refills there. I buy my Moleskine
mm-hmm.
journals there. And I order my Crane stationery there. So I'm superstitious because the bookstore has helped me get going and get out there. And we had a standing room only debut there and people out onto the sidewalk
mm,
and
nice.
Couldn't get in. But We still order the stationery, and we still...
By the way, when you say superstitious, I mean, I guess that's one way of looking at it, but I'm seeing you as one with the bookstore.
Yes.
You know, it's part of you, so...
The kind of karma that it gives
right.
off of, well, it's not just a bookstore. They also have pens and stationery.
Yes.
I'm not doing a plug for them.
You may.
But I'm a writer, yes. and you want to be around all things written and all things writing.
I agree.
I don't feel the same about the computer store, and yes, I use my Mac, and I mm-hmm. love writing on it, working on it, but so the point is, the paper, the pen,
mm-hmm.
the feelings, getting to people.
Mm-hmm. Now, and now also, I mean, I'm seeing, you know, in what you're saying, when you were a kid, you were skating and skiing, and
wasn't a good skier. I was an okay skater, but yes.
But you're out there doing things. You're a physical person.
Yes.
Apparently.
Yes.
And so this is just part of that, that putting your physical self into what you do.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. I didn't realize that at the beginning. And the more that I did it, the more that I could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And the distillation process was really wild. But I worked with an editor in New York for 2 years.
On this book. Wow.
And I had already written the manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
And he was referred to me by a friend of a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what better, you know, my friend, the bartender in New mm-hmm. York, referred me to a friend who referred me to the editor.
Mm-hmm.
And I've since become very good friends with the person that referred me to the editor. Mm-hmm. She's going to be at the thing tonight.
Nice.
And she's just her and her husband. They're just delightful people. I didn't know them before. They're delightful people.
Mm-hmm.
And we've become very good friends. So all these things that came out of the process, not just the process, but the things that came
and
out
not
of
just
it.
The book.
And
yes.
not just the book.
Oh, that's so nice that you're doing more.
And hearing
how you go about it is really uplifting.
Well, I've been very fortunate. And like I say, getting to meet these people and getting to work with an editor who's had 9 New York Times number one best-selling authors that he's worked with, and
mm-hmm.
then get to work with him myself and got to be friends with him. That's a serendipity. You've
mm-hmm.
got a business relation, mm-hmm. but it's a serendipity. We've got a challenge, a problem. And we'll
yes.
work together, and now we've got... So the things that have come, I mean, I've already won.
Oh, yes.
You know, we really want to be a bestseller, et cetera,
sure.
et cetera. But the people that I've met, the experiences that I've got as a result of doing this, you know, it's really makes it easy to do that second book, which I started the day after.
Well,
I
finished
the first one.
Well, how nice that you're such an appreciative, open-hearted person that you can see all this. And make the next flow come kind of easily.
Well, I think I'm so fortunate, and I figure as long as I understand that, it's going to make a difference.
Yes.
In everything, not just the writing,
yes.
but in everything else. So, yes,
and
I did.
In your marriage and your friendships. And
right.
Of course.
Yes, I did this, but I've had help, and I've had people behind me and supporting, and people that I didn't know when I started.
Oh, so here's a really wonderful feature of you. It will be in my love letter to you. You seem to have, I knew there was something wonderful. You have no arrogance.
Well, that's, I hate that.
Well, yes.
I hate that.
Of course, who doesn't? But there are still people who are just shamelessly arrogant, and you don't have that at all. I'm feeling something particularly nice coming from you, and that's what it is. There's none.
It's just so, people are so, you know, you drill down to it, we're all kind of the same.
Right.
And, well, hopefully everybody's not crazy like me, but it's just, there's just so much to take from it. And
mm-hmm.
you say, maybe that's why I don't just stare at a blank page for hours, is because there's so many people out there to talk to see that.
So you know how to make yourself part of the world.
There's never a lack of material
yeah.
because you just feel it. And as long as you, I think, appreciate that.
Well, I think you're a lucky man that you were born with all this and that it was polished by whoever was in your life. And, you know, these things are part luck and part what you do with it. And I think what you're able to do with it is also luck of temperament.
Yes.
So thank you for doing this with me.
No, thank you.
I greatly appreciate it.
It's a wonderful experience. Here,
it's nice to know. I always feel the person behind the author.
It's a beautiful day, and to yes. sit and talk with somebody like you, it's a wonderful.
Thank you, dear.
I did an interview the other day, and it was over the radio. It was great, but sitting face to face and getting to meet somebody makes all the difference.
Yes, so. I agree. And I just want to remind everybody, here's another wonderful example, is if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is its own special occasion, and any time you choose to do it is the perfect time. Thank you for being with us, and we'll talk to you later. This is Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now.